Radio free readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Welcome to the Voice of the American Redoubt. This is June 3rd, Sunday evening, 8 p.m. in the Pacific time zones in the American Redoubt. You're listening to the John Jacob Schmidt Show, and I am John Jacob Schmidt, your host, and your name is my name too. If you're a God-fearing, liberty-loving patriot, hope you guys had a blessed week this week. Thank you for joining us for our 7-year anniversary episode. 7 years. On June 5th, 2011, we put out the very first Radio Free Redoubt podcast. I remember it well. I was nervous as all get out. As nervous as somebody could be. I had not ever done it before. I just knew there was a message. I knew that there was something burning inside of me that I wanted to scream out this message to the world. I did not know where it was going to go. And I did not know that it would last 7 years and that it would take me on this journey to where I am now. And who knows where we still have yet to go, but we're setting goals. We have a vision. I have a vision. I hope to cast that to you this year as we go throughout going into the summer now. Our 7th year, wrapping up our 7th year and going into our 8th year. After Wednesday, we'll be going on our 8th year and we'll have surpassed 7 years. Isn't that just, and you know, there's a lot of listeners out there that have been with me from the very beginning or very shortly thereafter. And I want to thank you guys for being out there. Just thank you. You've been such a blessing to me. And, so we've got more to go. We've got a special guest coming up in segment 4. We're going to bring him on. And next week, we've got another special guest, James Rawls, the one who kicked all this off, who inspired the American Redoubt, coined the phrase and explained what that meant, the American Redoubt, and set a fire burning in me. As far as the only viable solution that I see to what's going on in America for, I guess, as a response, I don't see it being fixed. I see something bigger than that on a much grander strategic level. So, something proactive, the American Redoubt. So anyway, we'll talk about that later on. Lots to cover, but first the news and commentary. Brought to you by our friend and author, Glenn Tate, with the 299 Days book series, with all 10 books out, including the audio. And if you don't know it, Amron and John Jacob Schmidt and Radio Free Redoubt are mentioned in the 43 kernels in the final book. That was a special treat. Check it out if you haven't done so already. Thank you, guys. Now, this first story, this is beautiful because the jobs numbers have just absolutely, utterly stunned all the naysayers. And I have this here. It's a contrast between June 1st of 2016 versus June 1st of 2018, 2 years later. So, let's say non-farm payrolls rose seasonally, adjusted 223,000, unemployment rate at 3.8%. 18-year low? Wow. Unbelievable. Listen to this. Now, this is the person who previously occupied the White House, whose name will not be mentioned, versus today's modern-day Churchill, President Donald Trump. Listen to this.
He's going to bring all these jobs back. Well, how exactly are you going to do that? What are you going to do? There's no answer to it. He just says, well, I'm going to negotiate a better deal. Well, how exactly are you going to negotiate that?
These are exciting times for America. We are being respected again. We're being respected abroad. And we are restoring our wealth at home. It's about time. We have reached yet one more historic milestone. With 3.8% unemployment just announced and another all-time record low, African-American unemployment, Hispanic unemployment, at an all-time low in history. We're very honored by that. And by the way, for the women out there, the lowest unemployment in 19 years. And I'll be soon saying that will be in history also, very soon. That won't take much long.
He's going to bring all these jobs back. Well, how exactly are you going to do that? What are you going to do?
You would not understand it if he did explain it to you. So how about just stepping aside and letting the professional handle this? You don't have to have it explained to you. Just learn, watch and learn as he demonstrates to you. Isn't that awesome? I love it. Another cool stuff that I love category in the news. Trump's border wall breaks ground in San Diego. That's the headline from the New York Post. It says, a 14-mile section of President Trump's border wall is under construction in San Diego at a cost of $147 million. That's chump change compared to what they blow out of D.C. But look at this. First of all, the headline is wrong. Trump's border wall breaks ground in San Diego. It's not Trump's border wall. It's the American people's border wall. It's the citizens' border wall. It's our border wall. The people of America, it's our border wall. The people of the United States of America, it's not Trump's border wall. Trump is carrying out the will of the overwhelming majority of the American people. It's not Trump's border wall, it's our border wall, and we finally have hired somebody who will listen and do what we tell them to do, and that is to secure our blankety-blanking borders for a change. The money comes from the omnibus spending bill that Trump signed in March. The legislation included a $1.6 billion down payment on the great, great, quote-unquote, wall that Trump promised throughout his presidential campaign would stretch across the nation's southern border. Hallelujah! It will reach up 30 feet high, topped with a sheer vertical anti-climbing plate that offers no hand or footholds for illicit border crossers. It's going to replace a long stretch, 8 to 10 foot high metal fencing that was built in the 1990s out of scrap metal and repurposed steel plates. Rusted and wobbly, blobbity, blobbity. And I just couldn't be happier to see that finally take place way behind schedule. So Trump, I'm sorry, Mr. President Trump, you have a history of boasting about meeting projects ahead of schedule and under budget. So we want to see some performance here. How's that? That's not too much to ask, is it? Okay, here's one that's not as happy news, unfortunately. From The New American, which I love the John Birch Society. They've just been watchdogs over socialism and communism encroaching into the United States. The New American is their publication. Outstanding. U.S. school kids told to declare submission to Allah. 12 and 13-year-old students in West Virginia were ordered by a government school teacher to declare their submission to Allah, the Islamic God, as part of the Muslim declaration of faith known as the Shahada, which we've heard about this before. This is not the first time this has happened. This came out yesterday, June 2nd, 2018. It was released in the New American. The assignment sparked outrage among parents and comes amid similar scandals nationwide. The controversial exercise called for students in the 7th grade social studies to write out the words of Islamic conversion in Arabic calligraphy Oh, it's about calligraphy. It's artistic. It's studying, respecting other cultures, right? Well, it was reportedly part of a packet on world religion that was sent home with students. The Shahada, which students were ordered to write in Arabic, is one of the five pillars of Islam. It is a declaration of faith in Allah and in Muhammad, a man Islamic holy books describe as his messenger. While there is plenty on Islam in the packet, there were no Bible verses, no Ten Commandments, and no Lord's Prayer. How about if we had them write in calligraphy, so it's artistic, they could practice their calligraphy, writing something that says, I recognize that Jesus is the one and only Son of God who was sent here to die for our sins, who died and rose again, defeating death, and I believe in him, and I will follow him, and I am now a Christian. How about something like that? No, but we can't, because of the separation of church and state, which is the greatest lie ever bestowed on our country. Originally a Christian nation, a nation of Christians, if you will, or if you rather. But to this, there's just another reason to get your kids out of the schools. You know what? The parents aren't outraged. Well, if you're going to be outraged, you shouldn't be surprised. If you want to be outraged, that's fine. But it's time for you to yank your kids out of the public schools. If this is the kind of stuff that's going on in your school, West Virginia, get them out of that school, homeschool, or private school. Can't afford it. I don't have time to homeschool. There are co-ops. There are more and more co-ops growing all the time, enabling and empowering. Or get control of your schools, these nonpartisan elected positions where you are electing school board members. Get them out of there and get some patriots in there who can decide, who can accept it or reject curriculum, and find out, get to the bottom and find out who in the world is responsible for this. If you absolutely cannot or will not get your kids out of the public school, then take control of your public schools in your local community as an absolute last ditch effort. Alternative, which is something that we've been discussing. We need to make public schools an alternative to education instead of homeschooling and private schools an alternative to public schools. Public schools should be the alternative, in my opinion. Counterjihadreport.com has a article here. More than 90 Muslims, nearly all Democrats, are running for public office across the United States. You see what's coming? You see what's happened all across Europe. There are parts of Europe now where their elected officials are becoming so increasingly Muslim in numbers that there will be parts of the country in all of Germany, they're saying, what, by 2050? I think it was Germany, but definitely the Netherlands, that it will essentially be Muslim majority in several parts of Europe. They've got their eyes on the United States. They've said it. You don't have to make this stuff up. You can't make this stuff up. Here's another story out of CBSLocal.com. Chelmsford, the town of Chelmsford says a flag display has gone too far. They said Saturday, this real estate company. Saturday, they came out, they lined this street with 200 flags, or this area, this grassy area on the corner of a busy intersection. He says, we lined it with 200 flags in support of our deceased veterans and all the people who have served, from Layer Realty in Chelmsford. It could be Chelmsford. I don't know. Chelmsford. So I said, well, I can't pronounce this. I haven't heard of it before. I looked it up. Where's this Chelmsford? Chelmsford. Oh, it's in Massachusetts. It's in Massachusetts. It is basically where our country was born. It's where the resistance and the beginning of the Revolutionary War, was the epicenter. Massachusetts was the epicenter of patriot activity, the beginning of our nation. And now it has gone total European. That's why we call New England. It's not New England. It's New Europe now. So it's in Massachusetts. Any surprise? So he's talking about small American flags planted in front of that business for Memorial Day. When he went to work on Friday, there was a surprise. There was a note in the door from the building department stating they had a violation, a flag violation, excessive flags. So they had 200 flags planted out there. They've done this before. Several years they've done this apparently. But this time some building department inspector, I know there's a backstory to this. I'd love to know who this building inspector is, who in their estimation, in their judgment, and in their opinion, the flags, it's just too many flags. It's excessive. So you got to remove them. So what they do? They went out and planted 300 more flags. So now there's 500 flags. So now of course, this has gotten so much attention. The city council does not want this type of attention because they're taking heat from all over the country because of excessive American flags. It's because it's a rule violation, because their ordinance says you can't use flags to promote your business. Like, we're not promoting business. We're commemorating those who've given their lives to our country. So, anyway, they are going to be going toe-to-toe with the city government there. The town hopes the realty company will get in touch so they can discuss the number of flags. And they're saying they want to adjust the number to a reasonable amount. Well, they're not sure what reasonable – I'm not sure what reasonable means – they'll come up with some arbitrary number, like only 100 flags or only 10 flags per square, one per 10 square feet. How's that? Some kind of arbitrary number for what'll be too much or enough American flags without being too much. Unbelievable. Private property. Honoring those who've given their lives. But it's Massachusetts, the fallen, the occupied territories, previously known as the United States of America. It is clearly occupied territory now. Unbelievable. In Redoubt News, if you haven't been following Redoubt News, they're covering some great stories over there. But one in particular, will Trump pardon the Hammond ranchers? The pardon for Dwight and Steve Hammond is in President Trump's office. It's critical that we immediately gather as many signatures as possible to show support for their pardon. So please follow the link and sign the petition and then confirm your signature via email. And you can do that by following the link. That is, we'll put this in the highlights and resources posting, but you can go directly to Redoubt News also if you want to. And in that article, will Trump pardon the Hammond ranchers? You can go to that article, and that link to that petition is right there in that article. So I want to urge you, patriots out there in the listening audience, to go to redoubtnews.com and scroll down to the article, will Trump pardon the Hammond ranchers, and sign the petition. Now, as you know, this is the Hammond ranchers were father and son who went to jail for arson, which for starting a backfire on the property that they managed. They're cattle ranchers, and it got out of control. They quickly got it back under control, and they were under the domestic homeland security. Terrorism. Oh my gosh, I don't have it right in front of me. Anyway, it's an act of terrorism, arson, because wildfire, terrorist act, mandatory prison sentence. So by the time they realized this, these guys went to jail. They got out, and then they said, oh, wait, this is arson under domestic homeland terror laws, which I apologize, I don't have right in front of me. I used to know the story like the back of my hand. But anyway, they said, no, you need to go back because there's a mandatory minimum sentence for terrorism, arson, and they had to go back. That's what kicked everything off there with the Malheur Wildlife Refuge standoff, where the Patriots were just furious and a small group of them decided we're going to go and occupy this refuge in protest to bring attention to this injustice. And that's what kicked all that off. But anyway, it's very possible that, President Trump will be pardoning the Hammond father and son. So let's hope that happens. You can help make that happen by signing that petition. All right, let's go ahead and take a break. I want to thank Phil Rose Knives. If you guys don't have, Father's Day is coming up. You're starting to think, what can I get for Father's Day? It's like, gosh, it's so hard to find what to get for Father's Day. Well, Phil Rose Knives, you can go to prosknives.com, P-R-O-S-E, knives.com. We'll put this in the highlights and resources posting, and you can also click on that banner, Phil Rose Knives, there at radiofreeredoubt.com. But if you're looking for a Father's Day present, these are top. I have one. I use it regularly. It is a tool. It's a super high-quality, amazing knife. It holds the edge. It's just I love it. It's a tool. Heavy duty, feels awesome in your hand, and top quality, known around the world by people in law enforcement and special operations community who've rated this very high, and I do too. So philrose.com, prosknives.com. All right, let's take a break. We'll be right back in just a moment with segment two coming up. Don't go away.
Number three on our list of obligations is to understand socialism and all the cunning disguises in which it presents itself to the American people. Our fourth obligation is to understand propaganda techniques as used by both the communist and the socialist. This is a very vitally important need. Thousands of good, loyal Americans have been duped into actually aiding the communist, simply because they did not look carefully before they joined some high-sounding venture, or before they more or less blindly advocated some course of action.
This is Matt Shea with your daily news commentary, the way I see it. The 51st state, Liberty State. There are a lot of myths going around, and one of them is that it's not popular, born of ignorance, and only a bunch of hicks support the move to split a state. Well, that's funny, because polls with over 10,000 responses, including KXLY, not known as a bastion of conservatism, showed an average of 74% in support. Crosscut, a socialist-leaning publication, said the movement is born of ignorance. They claim that us hicks actually do share the same values, culture, traditions, and heritage as downtown Seattle. Really? We believe the Constitution means what it says, and the Bible is the Word of God. We believe in the sanctity of life, liberty, property, and the ability to defend the same. Time and again, Seattle has rejected and repudiated those ideas. The truth is, we are already two states, and the fact they have to ridicule such a popular idea proves it. At least, that's the way I see it. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for listening. Paid for by the Committee to Elect Matt Shea Republic.
In addition to voting in all elections, become active in government. Run for local, state, and national office, or help select capable people of the highest integrity to serve. Be constantly vocal on all local and national political issues. Tell your representatives in Congress, or even the president himself, what you think is the best course on issues that come before the public.
We're back. Segment two. Segment two is brought to you by our friends, Selkirk Mountain Real Estate, Patriot-owned real estate company helping patriots just like you get strategically relocated. Now, while you can, while we have to take advantage of this borrowed time, if you are looking for moving, relocating in the panhandle of Idaho, in northern Idaho, these guys, that's where they focus on. So SelkirkMountainRealEstate.com. They've helped many patriots get relocated. They can help you too. So check them out. All right. Now, there was an article that came out. There was a piece that author James Rawls posted over at his very famous blog, SurvivalBlog.com. And this has been reposted all over the place. We've reposted it. Redoubt News has it posted there. Western Journal has it posted just all over the place. Excellent, excellent, and very insightful. I think you should read it. The Mathematics of Countering Tyranny. And what it is about the cost. If our government became co-opted by some leftists who decided to use our law enforcement and military to enforce unlawful and unconstitutional gun confiscation operations, what would be the ramifications of that? Now, the introductory proviso says this: the following essay on possible gun confiscation is a purely conjectural Gedanken experiment about the future that extrapolates from recent history and current trends. Nothing herein is seditious per 18 U.S. Code, Title 18, U.S. Code 2384, nor a call to arms, nor a threat to our government or to any individual agency or group. So keep that in mind. This is purely a Gedanken experiment, is an experiment carried out, this German, by the way, carried out in thought only. It's a thought experiment. A thought experiment considers some hypothesis, theory, or principle for the purpose of thinking through its consequences. Given the structure of the experiment, it may not be possible to perform it. And even if it could be performed, there need not be an intention to perform it. Okay, so that's what a thought experiment is. That's all this is. Okay, so the collectivist dream, the current mass media-driven debate on firearms, actually more like paternalistic lecturing for chiding, seems to be leading toward greater restrictions by Congress. The collectivist gun grabbers have the dream of ignoring the Second Amendment and somehow magically removing all detachable magazine semi-auto rifles from civilian hands. But it is just that, a dream. If they think they can disarm us, then they are thoroughly deluded. Well, they are delusional, and liberalism has also been said to be a mental disorder, so don't think they won't try it. I'll explain why with some simple mathematics. Well, he goes into these mathematics. Now, this is an excellent article. Strongly recommend that you read this. It's very thought-provoking, and it reminds me of something I'm going to get into here in just a moment. He says there are somewhere between 370 million and 420 million privately owned firearms in the United States. Let's just call it 400 million for a nice round figure. Most of those guns are not registered to particular owners. That is why there are only rough estimates. It makes me feel good to know that Big Brother has no idea where those guns are and who owns them. When I last checked, the article says, the total U.S. population is 327,708,500. So that's about 1.2 guns per person. The adult population is around 249.5 million. And according to Wikipedia, the fit for service military age male population, that's men between the ages of 16 and 49, of the U.S. is just 59,764,677. That equates to 6.6 guns per military age male in the United States. Okay, then he breaks down the different types of firearms. This is beautiful. Well done. So, with every passing year, the predominance of semi-autos is gaining for both rifles and handguns. The biggest selling handgun in the country is the Smith & Wesson M&P 9mm, followed closely by the Glock Model 19 9mm. Hua. Gaining rapidly is the highly modular 6 SIG P320, which I've been drooling over, which was recently adopted by the U.S. Army. All three of these are semi-automatic. Standard magazine sizes for auto pistols range from 13 to 20 rounds. Not legal in the People's Democratic Republic of California, by the way. And the most popular rifles of the decade are AR-15s and their clones. So their standard capacities magazines hold 30 cartridges. Which is not high capacity. High capacity would be a 250-round beta mag. That's high capacity. 30-round magazine is just standard capacity. All right. So what he does is he breaks this down as far as the law enforcement or it doesn't get into the military component of this. It only strictly deals with law enforcement. So he breaks some math down. 80,000 SWAT-trained police in the country. 2,623 ATF special agents. 200 FBI HRT members. That's 82,863 potentially available door kickers, right? Now, presumably working in teams of eight, attempting to seize 9 million newly contraband semi-automatics. So, let's stop right there. Actually, he brings up, seven very good points. So we have to assume, one, that every SWAT-trained officer in the country is pressed into service. Number two, that there would be no false positives, meaning that 100% of the tips leading to raids were accurate, which is, figure the odds of probability for that. Number three, that no local police departments would opt out of serving unconstitutional federal gun warrants. Also unlikely. Number four, that all raids would be successful. Also unlikely. Number five, that each successful raid would net an average of 3 contraband semi-auto rifles. That's possible. Number six, let's assume that every door kicker would get an equal share in the work. Also very unlikely. And number seven, that every door kicker would be alive and well through the entire campaign of terror with no incapacitating injuries or deaths of SWAT officers, no refusals, no resignations, and no early retirements. Also very unlikely. So, now a lot of those are not safe assumptions, but for the sake of completing this exercise, let's pen this out on the back of a napkin. He says in the article, as a best case for an unconstitutional gun confiscation campaign, here are the division equations. 9 million divided by 82,863 equals 108. That's 8 officers per team. That's 864 raids per officer. So let that sink in. Every officer would have to survive 864 gun-grabbing raids. And, of course, he goes on with the article. Very thought-provoking, very interesting, and something that should be very alarming for those who might consider how they might be pressed into service. Now, I know there's plenty of oath-keeping sworn officers out there. So, you know, the numbers obviously would dwindle. But there are some who will just blindly follow orders, whether they're lawful or not. And this is also, for us to be free, we have to learn how to be free. We were talking about this because what I'm wondering is, how many people would actually resist just playing out this thinking exercise, how many Americans truly would resist? Probably not many at first. And then the number would increase. But there are so many people that are willing to wear chains for a little bit of peace and prosperity. We have to learn how to be free. I was talking about this with Mark Herr from Center for Self-Governance also about how people would say, I know I'm kind of getting off on a side tangent here, talking about the firearms and firearms being confiscated and the mathematics of that tyranny. But we also have to consider the willingness of the people, how far they're willing to go to be free. And I'm a little bit concerned. Because I see people, just the discussion of Liberty State breaking off from Washington, so having a Washington state right down the Cascades, everything east in eastern Washington becoming Liberty State or the State of Liberty. Because what we hear is people saying, oh, being free from eastern Washington or being free from western Washington would be wonderful. To be break free from Olympia and Seattle, that would be just great. But we could never afford it. We wouldn't have a strong enough economy. The system required to manage all this land is just too big for us to do all by our little old selves. We have a smaller population. We wouldn't be able to manage it. We couldn't manage all those lands. We couldn't afford it. They are afraid of being free because they wouldn't have as many subsidies and handouts. That's a scary thought. And we're talking about this with prisoners. How many prisoners have you seen recently released from prison that refuse to leave? They don't want to leave. How about Escape from Sobibor? How many of you seen that movie where they plan this big escape? They overpowered the guards. They busted through the wire, and everybody's running for freedom, running to the woods. And there are those prisoners in a extermination camp who just sat down on the ground and shook their heads. No, I can't leave. I can't. Here's the story right here. I just picked one out of hundreds. Well, I don't know about hundreds, scores of stories. This guy, a prisoner who refused after being acquitted by a judge, didn't want to leave. He says, I have no place to go or anybody to go to. I have no job or business. I want to go back to prison where I can at least be sure to eat something every day. I'll have three hots and a cot. So the evidently apprehensive former prison inmate demanded to see the chief judge of the state to plead his case himself and explain to him why it was better to keep him in prison than outside the prison. There are sometimes when people lose freedom, when they have the opportunity to have it presented, they're afraid to take it. And I'm concerned about how many Americans have forgotten what it's like to be free again, at least until we get to a certain point where you're pressed just out of survival. You have to fight again. There's a book. I've got it on my shelf. I've talked about it before. We'll post a link to it. The Gulag Archipelago. That was written by Alexander Solzhenitsyn. And there's a quote that I've quoted often, and I want to read it again. And this is what it says. And how we burned in the camps later, thinking, what would things have been like if every security operative, when he went out at night to make an arrest, had been uncertain whether he would return alive and had to say goodbye to his family? Or if, during periods of mass arrests, as for example in Leningrad, when they arrested a quarter of the entire city, people had not simply sat there in their lairs, paling with terror at every bang of the downstairs door and at every step on the staircase, but had understood they had nothing left to lose and had boldly set up in the downstairs hall an ambush of half a dozen people with axes, hammers, pokers, or whatever else was at hand. The organs would have quickly suffered a shortage of officers and transport, and notwithstanding all of Stalin's thirst, the cursed machine would have ground to a halt if we didn't love freedom enough. And even more, we had no awareness of the real situation. We purely and simply deserved everything that happened afterward. Alexander Solzhenitsyn, in his book, The Gulag Archipelago. Now make me. Did I mean to treat you bad? Yeah, but I did anyway. Now maybe some would say your life was saved, yeah, but you lived it anyway. So maybe your friends will stand around you watch you crumble.
Mark Twain shared this insight. He said, in the beginning of a change, the patriot is a scarce man, brave, hated, and scorned. When his cause succeeds, however, the timid join him, for then it costs nothing to be a patriot. He's right, but now more than ever we cannot afford brave patriots to be a scarcity. They must be found in abundance. There may soon come a time when being a patriot without cost will be all but impossible. I'm Violette Sabo, with points to ponder, words to live by, and ideals which define us.
Hi everyone, this is John Jacob Schmidt, here to tell you about the 299 Days book series by lawyer and author Glenn Tate. Let Glenn take you on a wild ride through the collapse, community building, resistance against a corrupt system, and the rebirth of a new one. Go to 299days.com to learn more. We're back with segment three. Segment three brought to you by Strategic Landscape Design. Designed to help keep you safe and to help you thrive. If you're planning your property for integrating water access, food supply, energy production, security features, anything you need to do to become self-reliant and secure for your property, you need some assistance with that. Strategic Landscape Design does exactly that. If you're looking for property and you want an extra set of eyes from a professional's perspective to help you before you even make your purchase, they also provide those services. So check them out at strategiclandscapedesign.com. Okay. Happy anniversary to everybody out there in the listening audience, especially those of you who've been with us from the beginning. We are now 7 years old. 7 years old. 7 years. June 5th of 2011 was our very first episode. Now, since then, we've had 1,343,392 downloads just from Podbean, our podcast hosting site. That's just downloads. Not to mention all of the millions of listeners who have listened to episodes who didn't download them, plus our live listening audiences. 471, and now tonight, 472 episodes have been uploaded to the Podbean with over 1.3 million downloads. That also does not take into account being on the air with Representative Matt Shea on Patriot Radio. That also doesn't account for all of the terrestrial listeners when we broadcast it on the entire network, on the American Christian Network, which covered all of eastern Washington, the major areas, Wenatchee, Walla Walla, Yakima, Moses Lake, the Tri-Cities, Spokane, all over the place, into Oregon and North Idaho, and now on Liberty Broadcasting on two AM stations and one FM station every Saturday. There's no way of knowing how many people are out there listening. And sometimes there have been times, including recently, I just felt tired. Just like, how much longer do I want to do this? And it seems like every time I get to that point, I get hit with several testimonies from people that have been impacted by things that I've said or perspectives that I've shared, experiences that I've shared, or saying something that made somebody else encouraged or feel like going on when they felt like giving up. And that was very moving. Last night, I was at the Spokane County Republican Lincoln Day dinner. It is a fundraiser for the Republican Party. And, you know, there's a lot of rhinos and a lot of snobby elbow, you know, hobnobbing and fake smiles and all that stuff that goes on in politics. But there's also a lot of really, really good people there as well. And I was standing at a table helping out, answering questions and stuff with Representative Matt Shea's election table and the Liberty State information table. And I was surprised at how many people came up and shook my hand, who I didn't even know, who said, thank you for what you do. That just, God bless you for what you do. I was sure so appreciated. Or they hear my voice and they recognize my voice and they will introduce themselves or something like that. Or somebody, you know, elected officials just saying, you know, hey, you have no idea the impact that you're having to keep doing what you're doing. You're affecting so many people. Thank you. And you forget that when you're by yourself in your studio and you're recording a show or you're broadcasting live over the radio and you get kind of in your own little bubble. But I want to talk a little bit about the history of how all this started. It's for those of you that are newer to Radio Free Redoubt, this all started with a letter that, for those of you, most of you have heard this already, but most of you have heard me talk about this article that's posted. If you click on the American Redoubt tab over there at survivalblog.com, James Rawls wrote a very well done, very insightful article, like most of his usually are, in the spring of 2011. And my father sent this to me. He emailed it to me. I hadn't read Survival Blog in a while. And he said, hey, did you read this article? This thing that James Rawls is calling the American Redoubt. It's really, really interesting. You think you'll like it. So he sent it to me and I kind of breezed over it. And I'm like, yeah, that's kind of cool. And it just is something that I pondered for the next week to 10 days. It just kind of kept coming back to my mind. So I went back and I perused it the next time. I just carefully read, I digested every word and the concepts. And I was thinking, at this time of seeing our country morally, economically, politically, just decaying and frustrated, like most of us, not really seeing a solution. I don't see a fix. Now, understanding history, like I do, I understand the history of empires and nations rising and falling, and I understand the macro history, and I see common threads between all of these cultures, these republics, these empires that have risen to greatness and then fallen. And I've shared with you many studies of the similarities, the common threads that you can see, where it's predictable now because we have the advantage of having history, unlike, say, the Roman Empire. We have the advantage of history to look back and see the warning signs when a culture is in decline and when it is ready to slip into the history books like all the others. Every one of them thought that they were exempt. They were so great, they could never fail. They were so big and so powerful. And, you know, we're reminded in the Bible where the great Babylon will fall in a day, in an instant, in an hour, and the world will be stunned. You could argue that the United States really meets that description of what is still yet to come, prophesied to come. I don't know. But what I saw is one option that I think is the most viable option right now. And that's what James Rawls pointed out. And that is for God-fearing, liberty-minded patriots to right now, or for the last 7 years, to begin strategically relocating, pulling up their businesses and their families, and shoring up these areas that are already conservative, like the American Redoubt, the state of Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, and the eastern portions of Oregon and Washington. That's the American Redoubt. Very rough border. Don't get hung up on where the border is. Okay, it's just a map to demonstrate a concept, but it's taken hold. There are people now. Idaho now is right in the center of the American Redoubt. Is now the fastest growing state as far in terms of population in the country. People are exiting the west side of Oregon and Washington. They're exiting Illinois and Colorado, especially the I-25 corridor, liberal bastions, California. They are leaving these places and they are going to areas that are conservative. We're seeing a lot of movements to like Texas and even Arizona and other places. But the American Redoubt is growing so fast, it's blinding. And it's just really amazing to be a part of that. I'm not responsible for the most of that growth, but I know from the testimonies that I've definitely affected many, many people to strategically relocate. And that does not come without a sense of really kind of heavy responsibility you feel when people are making major decisions like that. I don't take that lightly. And I tell you always, when you decide to move, you need to prayerfully consider that very serious move. But if you feel prompted to, I want to encourage you, God-fearing, liberty-loving patriots everywhere, to consider strategically relocating to somewhere conservative. And there are people in New York that are moving upstate to the Adirondacks, super conservatives, like a little mini redoubt. People are moving into the Appalachians and the Smoky Mountains. They are moving into Missouri. It's a very dynamic area. There's some major cities there that you don't want to be anywhere near. But that whole central part, the flyover, you know, part of the United States. Many people are moving to Arizona, especially the northern mountainous part where there's water and mountains and not desert. But I really believe that, and of course, Texas for political reasons, we're seeing Texas really come under, it's turning purple, it's going to be blue, 7-10 years, they're saying, less than that now. And it's very close, also has extremely high Muslim populations now and growing. So that could be problematic, you know, in the next generation. But the American Redoubt, James Rawls, identified as the top pick for strategically relocating for Christian patriots. I agree. Now, how this got started, I've always been fascinated. I've always been a longtime listener of talk radio, G. Gordon Liddy and Rush Limbaugh, and in the earlier days, many of them. And sometimes I just get tired of listening to them. Sometimes I get tired of listening to myself, but I've always really enjoyed that political talk radio. So I've always been fascinated by that, but I've always really been fascinated by the Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty that we saw during the Cold War, broadcasting, you know, from the free zones across the Iron Curtain into occupied territory. You know, it's encouragement to those of you, the oppressed, to send a message of hope, not doom and gloom or despair. The people already knew the situation was desperate, but it was a message of hope despite all of the negativity, right? And of course, the same thing with Radio Free Redoubt. I want it to be a message of hope or to awaken the masses who've been asleep. And then it becomes a rude awakening. It seems doom and gloom and despair, but it's really not. We're already headed toward the decline of America. So what's the positive message? What's the message of hope? The hope is that we can rebuild something that reflects what the Founding Fathers envisioned, the things that will restore and preserve our values if we are the majority of the demographics in a region. That's historically what we've seen. And anytime a empire collapses, there's two things, one of two outcomes. One, it's overtaken by a foreign invader and they are basically oppressed until, you know, for many generations, they're owned by somebody. The other outcome, potential outcome, this is what I'm hopeful for, is that a large empire will break up and it will fragment and several smaller nations, self-ruling nation states will rise out of that. And they'll have their own set of rules, their own laws, their own values and their own language and all of this based on the majority of the demographics in each of those regions. So, the strategic component to this is very forward thinking. It's very audacious. It's very bold. I understand that. It's huge, big picture stuff. It's beyond prepping and how many bullets should I store and how many cans of dehydrated butter should I have? This is like, get past that. You prep so that you can survive hardship, so you can be a contributor to rebuilding something and restoring something when the time comes. So don't get hung up on just prepping and then preparing for the disaster. And that's as far as your mind can think. You think beyond that. And that's where my thinking is. I'm just a strategic thinking kind of person. So message of hope. That's how Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty was. News, bringing news that you couldn't get elsewhere or would rarely be mentioned or if mentioned at all by, especially by state-run communist media. And what do we see in our mass media today? Controlled narratives, right? So I want to get to that, but I want to stick with truth. But also very much it's propaganda. It's in the good sense. In other words, we're propagating ideas. Okay. Propaganda is kind of a bad word, right? It's become a bad word, but it really means to propagate an idea, to cast out, like casting seeds, right? You're propagating, ideas and thoughts. Okay. So, and then of course my message also is you're not alone. I don't want you to feel like you're alone, because as patriots, we feel isolated. Like you're the only one, you're the freak in your neighborhood that believes in Jesus, and you think that the government shouldn't be spending so much money, and you should have the right to defend yourself. And you think that marriage is behind, this is really way out there. Marriage is between a man and a woman. I know that's crazy stuff, but you feel that way, and then you feel like you're the only one, or maybe other people might feel the same way, but nobody talks about it. If you speak up and go peep, then everybody wants to pound on you, right? Because you're so full of hate or whatever it is. It's the controlling mechanisms. So I want to let people know you're not alone, to give you hope. And that was one of the primary goals of Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty, is to give hope to people. And that's what I hope to do. Now, I was reading in Lamentations in my Patriots Bible, and there's little segments there that, relate to, how the Word of God impacted leaders and in different parts of the forming of our nation. There's one they singled out. I want to read it to you. It's from Lamentations 3:26. It is good that one should hope. Well, I read this, and actually I went back so I could get context, and I read the whole chapter 3. I didn't read the whole chapter 3. I glanced over the whole chapter 3 just before the show, and I see hope, 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 hope. It jumps out at you all throughout. And the publishers titled chapter 3 as The Prophet's Anguish and Hope. Isn't that interesting? So if you turn to this, if you turn to the next page here, I want to read this to you, because this is what inspired them. And this is what inspired me, I guess, with Radio Free Redoubt. And that's off of Lamentations 3:26, I should say, inspired this thought in me. And that is to give hope to other believers. And they titled this, The Prophet's Anguish and Hope. So the anguish, this is how this inspires me, is that the anguish is that our country, once a great nation, has turned away from God. We're decaying. Our crime is increasing. People are becoming so hard-hearted. And there's a war against, godliness and goodness. That's the anguishing part. The part that our economy, we're in so much debt, we can't overcome it. Mathematically, no matter what our unemployment rate is, right? That's the anguish part. But the hope, I want to give hope too, that there's a plan, there's a future. If we all strengthen ourselves and strengthen one another, we can get through this and have a hand in, Lord willing, rebuilding something on the other side of this. It's not doom and gloom. It's hope, despite the anguish, right? Okay, so I want to read something. They point this out. This is a speech by Ronald Reagan. In 1974, he gave this speech called The Last Best Hope of Man. So in 1974, Ronald Reagan gave his famous Shining City Upon a Hill speech, and concluded it by saying, "We cannot escape our destiny, nor should we try to do so. The leadership of the free world was thrust upon us 2 centuries ago in that little hall of Philadelphia. In the days following World War II, when the economic strength and power of America was all that stood between the world and the return to the Dark Ages, Pope Pius XII said, 'The American people have a great genius for splendid and unselfish actions. Into the hands of America, God has placed the destinies of an afflicted mankind. We are indeed, and we are today, the last best hope of man on earth.'" That's America he was speaking of. That's America. And you talked to, we were just having this discussion last night with a couple people talking about the passion that refugees have who've come from Cuba, who've come from Eastern Europe, who've escaped oppression, who've escaped North Korea, and who are such powerful patriots, warning us that the path that we're on is heading to our destruction. They are saying so quickly, so readily that America is the last best hope for mankind. You cannot let it be extinguished because there's nowhere left to go. And Reagan said that too. Well, unfortunately, the communists have infiltrated. They are destroying America. They've carried out almost all of the planks, based on my estimation, of the communist doctrine. And it is leading. You can see the writing on the wall that the United States is headed toward its final stages of decline. And the hope there is that there is one more place that you can go. The United States, if you look at Massachusetts and the headlines coming out of there, or California, you'd think there's no hope for America. But that's not America. That's only a small segment of America. But you will not be able to turn those people around. Americanism still lives in people across the country in pockets, and the American Redoubt is one of them. And so that's what Radio Free Redoubt is all about, to broadcast to those oppressed in occupied territory, to come to the free zones if you're able to, and if you, after prayerfully deciding that's the right thing for you to do, we want to welcome you, because we must strengthen the conservative areas and regions everywhere that they exist, and strengthen them and get out of occupied territory. It's fallen. Lot, it's time to get your family and leave Sodom. It's time. Because yes, God is merciful, but he's also just. And we are very deserving of his justice. And it's not going to be a good thing for many people. And I believe that's coming for our country. And I think right now is the time to do it proactively. Now, Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty were hated by the communists. Hated. Very interesting article here I want you guys to read about Radio Free Europe. This is by Jackie Whiting, or Whiting, on U.S. History, Radio Free Europe, talking about the story of Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty, by Sissy Dore Hill. And they start off with a quote by President Harry Truman. It says this: "This is a struggle, above all, for the minds of men. Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty fought communism by broadcasting news and features from Munich to countries behind the Iron Curtain. Despite jamming, acts of terrorism, and even opposition by some members of Congress, Radio Free Europe and Radio Free Liberty have remained on the air, broadcasting uncensored news since the early 1950s. And so Radio Free Redoubt joins their legacy in spreading hope and encouragement and calling to action those who love liberty, those who do want to throw off the chains of oppression, and right here in our own country. And there are people who do feel they are in occupied territory right here in the United States of America. And the communists hate Radio Free Redoubt. Those on the left, those with adopting communist doctrine and ideologies. The Southern Poverty Law Center has listed me as anti-government, which is extremely false and debunked. They stopped actually saying that, but they switched to saying I'm an extremist. Well, Jesus was an extremist. Our founding fathers were extremists. So I guess I'm just going to have to live with the label of being an extremist, because at some point, believing that a marriage is between a man and a woman became extreme. Somewhere along the line, believing that a unborn child is innocent and deserving of protecting, that became extreme. The thought that the government should be responsible and to stay within the restraints of the Constitution became an extreme idea. So there's a lot of things that are very extreme. It's extreme to want to protect the United States from being infiltrated and the Constitution being subverted and replaced with Sharia law, and to think that preserving the Constitution and preventing the establishment of Sharia law inside the borders of the United States, that became extreme. So I'm an extremist, and I embrace it. And every time myself or one of my contemporaries are listed in the Southern Poverty Law Center on their little hate watch, so-called hate watch, propaganda rag, we wear that as a badge of honor. So it's a wonderful thing. Anyway, We got a special guest that's it's on the line, so he's waiting. So I don't want to – I can keep going on and on about this, but I'm going to take a break, and when we come back, special guest. When you haven't heard from in a little while, I know you guys – many of you have been asking about him, so you stay right there. This is the voice of resistance against everything that has set itself against the values and our heritage that we love and we cherish. This is Radio Free Redoubt.
Greetings, Patriots. This is Chris Walsh, broker at Revolutionary Realty, located in the heart of America's Great Redoubt, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. I sell land and backwoods cabins to America's Patriots every day. Creeks, springs, timber, and game, good survivable property without natural disasters. The state of Idaho has a balanced budget, and our people believe deeply in the Second Amendment. Call me today at 208-667-1776, or visit me online at www.revrealty.us. I'll be glad to serve you, and God bless America.
Never give in. Never, never, never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in except to convictions of honor and good sense. Never yield to force. Never yield to the apparently overwhelming might of the enemy.
Hey, this is Jordan Page, and you're tuned into Radio Free Redoubt.
All right, we're back with segment four. Thank you guys for sticking around. Segment four is brought to you by our friends at Works Holsters. Works LLC, right here in the American Redoubt with a lifetime guarantee on all their products. And as I mentioned last fall when I took a tour of their facility, they have really risen to the top as their quality, their product is just amazing. So check them out, support them, and thank them for supporting Radio Free Redoubt. Go to works.com, W-E-R-K-Z. All right, now I mentioned we got a special guest coming up, someone that we've all grown very fond of and have missed lately in the last year and a half. And that is Fox 519, one and only Radio Free Redoubt's Fox 519. Thank you for being with us, brother.
Absolutely. It is great to be back visiting with you. Always always enjoy it, bringing the news to the audience. Unfortunately, I've been a little out of the loop lately.
Yeah, you have, but it's been good stuff. And you and I finally got to see each other Friday night for the first time in way too long. It's really good seeing you again. And good getting caught up, and it was just really a treat. And so I wanted to, I know it's going to be a treat for a lot of our longtime listeners that have missed you. People continuously ask about you. And for those of you that didn't know, Fox 519 provided us with a weekly segment, Eye on the Economy, talking about things that you need to be aware of in the economy, things that could impact you and affect you as a prepper and a patriot. And it was a great feature for Radio Free Redoubt. So how – I know your work, you had a career change. How is that – how's that working for you? I mean, how's
– Oh, you know, it's fun now because I actually – you know, after leaving and you know, not doing Eye in the Economy, life completely changed for me. It was very different. Lost 67 pounds. Went to work for a local Christian college here in the Redoubt, and now I travel the Redoubt, meeting with folks who are just like the listening audience, who are concerned about the way the world is going, who love God, support this Christian college, but at the same time are very focused on the communities around them, which is refreshing to see, and especially in the world today, that with so much negativity going on, that we have people and Christian brothers and sisters that are out there who still serve and love God in the capacities that they're in.
You bet. And they're aware. They're aware of the challenges that we face today. And I think it's great. It's been really a very cool thing from my perspective to watch you just blossom in that new a new kind of a shift in your career, that a new calling, and that's some pretty exciting stuff. But you have a banking and economic background. And we wanted to tap your brain a little bit because we're kind of dry here. We need some Fox 519 eye on the economy perspective. There's a lot of stuff going on right now. You know, Venezuela, of course, continues to melt down. By contrast, in the United States, we see, you know, these new jobs numbers, the new unemployment. It's looking very positive, you know, with Trump. The things that he's implementing. So where do you see all this and the swirling up and down? Oil prices are astronomical right now. So what's your take? I guess your kind of an aggregate assessment of the whole overall economic picture.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, guys, I mean, first and foremost, thinking through just the current state of economics in America, yeah, things are better. We traditionally do better in the economy when we have a Republican in office, and that is because they're definitely more fiscally conservative. They typically cut. They don't spend as much. They're still spending way too much, in my opinion, but they don't spend as much. And yes, we are seeing an increase in job numbers. In fact, right now I'm very much tracking the higher education sector, just because that's the world that I'm living in. And what I'm seeing is that there is still a downtrend in higher education because students don't want to graduate with this much debt. But the parents themselves are outspending gobs of money on consumables. We're talking in terms of electronics. Electronic sales are up almost 10% over last year, according to Best Buy. We're seeing a dramatic increase in the amount of home improvement products as well, where right now there's a very, very tight real estate market. In fact, inventory in the redoubt is at an all-time low.
Yes.
So if you're thinking of selling your home, it's a good time to do so, and you're probably going to fetch a fair price for it or more. But according to the realtors that I maintain contact with to still kind of monitor that area of economics, it does seem like right now that people are pouring lots and lots of money in their home. And when they're flooding the economy with money, obviously that means a dramatic increase in big box stores like Home Depot and Lowe's. So, yeah, we are seeing increase in job numbers because, you know, it's the season for that. Now, as we get closer to Christmas time, we're also going to see an increase in seasonal as well. But non-farm payrolls are up, and that's a good thing for the moment. We know – from a fiscal perspective, we're still going to print ourselves into a hole, and that my opinion will never change on that.
Yeah.
And there are some right now who are like, oh, you know, we're doing okay because we've got a Republican in office because we have Trump. Folks, Trump can make short-term gains on things, but he's never going to make the long-term to really dig us out of the hole. There's no way to truly dig it out of the hole. And there has been some rumblings and some discussions of making some pretty serious cuts to the Social Security system, which could lessen the blow in some aspects, but it's never going to officially fix the system, especially in terms of Social Security being such a Ponzi scheme where, you know, the low end money goes in and it's feeding out everybody at the top. And that's, yeah. I think one of the main things I've been watching lately is this massive network crash that took Visa offline in the UK and Europe.
Oh, yeah. Just 2 days ago.
Yeah, 2 days ago. That was a massive, absolutely massive outage, bigger than I've ever seen before in my life. We're talking Europe, we're talking London, we're talking Ireland. A better part of Europe was offline, and some of that actually cascaded into Asia as well as the day went on.
Yeah.
They're looking right now at infrastructure attacks. They're not fully aware of what could have caused it. I've always brought you Krebs on security is always something I've kind of kept an eye on too. Yeah. But when things like that take place where services are up and services are down, I've always been a proponent of having some cash or some type of alternative currency on hand at home. I know those out there in the listening audience are the ones who have that and who are prepared to do that. And it's still great to see that take place. And because I travel for my work, I actually travel now with a fair amount of alternative currency on me. If I were to be stranded somewhere, I at least have some type of bargaining power to get the fuel and supplies that I need to get back home.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was, I guess, the ultimate takeaway. And I was going to ask you if you'd heard or any follow-up as far as the root cause of that that outage. But yeah, all these people that could, that were traveling, there were people that were stranded. They couldn't, their visas simply were not working, and they couldn't, there was not a solution if they didn't have an alternative, you know, cash on hand and so on. So that was the big takeaway for me, is cash is king. Really. I mean, you got to have enough to function, when you're, especially when you're traveling. So, good stuff.
Well, I would agree. And traveling abroad is difficult when you don't, you need cash, you need currency of the local country. And sometimes I would even recommend, if you can get your hands on the previous currency of the country, you know, the kroners and those kind of things, as you're traveling abroad, at least have some of that. Sometimes local level economies will revert back to what they know.
Right.
They'll go back to a local currency. We're seeing that in Venezuela too, is that, you know, they're trying to work with a national currency, but local currencies are popping up all around the country.
Right.
You know, in some areas they're having their own little, you know, their Venezuelan bucks or whatever they're coming up with. So these little tiny communities, and then you've got to figure out from an economic standpoint, how do you operate community to community? What says that, you know, your five Venezuelan bucks and your five Madeira bucks are worth the same currency? And that's why, you know, silver is silver and gold is gold. And that's, you know, silver especially is so flexible. And so you can pull the value on the last day that things were collapsing and go, hey, an ounce of silver was worth this. So we can do the math and say a fourth of this. And, you know, it's easy to work from that capacity.
Yeah.
But I think that from a listening audience, you know, from folks who are out there who have been preparing, have seen things. Yeah, it's kind of a calm moment right now. I would say Venezuela is a great case study of what can happen when, you know, socialism is in full bloom and just
yes.
Cripples an economy, just cripples that country.
Yeah.
It wasn't true. The politics. It was the actual act of socialism and the printing of their dollars and the, you know, not having anything to back it that actually crippled that economy.
Right.
And anybody – it's interesting. I was reading an article by Paul Krugman the other day, and it's like, you know, he never debated the legitimacy of the internet and how it could affect economics. But, you know, he was going back and kind of recanting a bit, which was surprising for Krugman to do, that the economy in Venezuela – was severely impacted by the internet because people started transferring whatever wealth they had out of the country as they could.
Right.
And tried to find safe havens for it in other venues, offshore and things like that. And a lot of the wealthy were able to get their wealth out of the country electronically, and then get it housed in other areas before things really went south. And now all that's left are the folks behind who are trying to rebuild.
Right. Yeah. Rough stuff there.
Very rough stuff.
A lot of lessons. And of course, you know, anything, it also, it seems that, euros and US dollars, are pretty much kind of a universal currency, anywhere you're going to travel. If you can have those on you, that's huge.
Yeah.
I know. So they're trying to
get
a hold of.
And don't forget, we still have the SDR in China that's out, that's kind of looming out there in the ether, that they haven't fully really implemented that. And I think a lot of the world right now is still focused on what's going on with Brexit, because even that's not fully hasn't even fully moved forward. I think those are still some things we've really got to keep an eye on, especially the Brexit piece. I mean, it seems like one day things are moving along really well, and then one day it changes. I mean, it's really a moment to moment kind of thing.
Yes. Okay. So, what have you been tracking at all? The oil, why are oil prices just going through the roof right now? What's the excuse that's being given, and what's the truth?
Well, what's the excuse being given? Well, the excuse is always, oh, it's the summer travel season. And that seems to be, the press loves to go back to that. Oh, it's the summer travel season, so they're just going to jack up the prices on that. Well, those prices have to come out of somewhere. But the thing that people don't understand is that OPEC and Russia are really focusing in right now for long-term control over the oil market. And when you don't produce internally, I mean, we do, and I know lots of guys in the oil field, you know, here in America, but we're still not keeping it a lot at home. We're still trying to ship that stuff overseas.
Yeah.
You know,
well, we see all these coal trains too going. It's all going out. It's all going to China. It's, coming through the American Redoubt. It's just mile long train after train. I mean, it's just shipping our natural resources out. And, that's one thing I'd love to see Trump attack. And that's self-sufficiency as far as, oil, fuel. Boy, they got us there. So.
Oh, 100%. 100% agree. The weird thing is I look at and I hear news like the oil prices that plunged to 3.5 year highs and reports that the Saudis and Russia are going to add, a million barrel production supply to offset Venezuelan production. I mean, that's – if you think about when you throw a rock in a pond like Venezuela, I mean, yeah, you're seeing things crumble from an infrastructure perspective. But once the infrastructure goes offline and there's no power and there's nobody wanting to go to work and there's no guarantees – Venezuela was a gigantic producer of oil.
Yes.
So there are other nations that are going to have to step up. And right now the Saudis and the Russians are doing everything they can to try to fill that gap. But, it's supply and demand.
Right.
So, as less and less and less oil comes out of Venezuela, it's got to come out of somewhere else. And it was cheaper to buy Venezuelan oil to ship it across the country, across Mexico, across all those areas, rather than run a ship up the coast than it is trying to pump it from Arabia and Russia onto a container, refine it, and bring it over that way.
Right.
So no wonder we're seeing the increase. I mean, I'm seeing $5 and $6 down in California, for regular unleaded. I think, here on the Washington side of the readout, it's $3.44. And, I'm getting ready to go to the other side of the state on a trip, and I think it's probably in the 4.25 range.
Unbelievable.
It's astounding.
Unacceptable. Time to switch to a motorcycle.
Especially when we have the ability here in the States to be able to produce the oil that we need. I mean,
yep.
A guy I know well, I mean, he works on the oil field. He works for he works for Halliburton.
Oh.
And, he's all the time he's saying, I know we pour. I mean, they do a million barrels a year. And he's like, I know we can do more than that. But slow everything down. I mean, there's just.
Create bottlenecks.
They go 100 feet, and if it's wrong, they have to get a whole new permit, a whole new thing to go back and just redrill 12 inches from where they were. It's astounding how much that it kills the oil industry.
Unbelievable. There's the bottleneck there.
Oh, it's a complete bottleneck. And that's why in America we don't see the low oil prices that we do. I mean, they want to force us in. I mean, we know some of the Agenda 21 stuff is to try to get people to take more mass transit and get them to live in cities rather than out in the country like the rest of us do. But in the long run, I think this is going to get to the White House. I think in a matter of weeks, it's going to get to the White House, and they're going to do something about it. They'll open up the strategic reserves. They'll go and they'll lean on companies like Halliburton and some of those that are out there. Even those guys, who are they? Those guys down in Texas, Rooster and Butch, those guys you see on A&E all the time, they have wells, and I hear from those guys all the time how slow it is. And I'm very fortunate in this new position that I get to meet a lot of, I would say, more influential people in the world because of my connections now. And I hear from guys in Texas all the time about how they're told not to produce as much as they possibly can because they frankly.
It's
a money thing.
Production.
It really is a money thing.
Wow.
It's a greed thing, really, is what it comes down to. I mean, right now, and this just comes – here's a perspective for you. In the world that I work in the next 10 years, as Christians, we are going to see a $6 billion worth of wealth transfer between generations. That is the single biggest amount of wealth transfer it has ever been in the history of the world. Because Christians sit on their money. They sit on their money. They don't contribute to those who need it. I mean, we single-handedly could solve the national debt issue because Christians combined, just Judeo-Christian churches, hold almost $8.2 trillion in wealth.
Wow.
That's in liquid assets.
Yeah, wow. And but we're in just as much debt. we're right there with the rest of the world as far as debt goes too.
Right. But Christians themselves, I mean, we sit and sit in our money, but we don't ever give it back. We don't put our money where our mouth is.
And that's why it's so that's why we see the left outspending us and donating to these leftist organizations. It's like there's never any end. Was it how many billions of dollars $200 million the Southern Poverty Law Center has in money they got stored offshore? I mean, they're just bilking the system. It's just unbelievable. And that's just one organization. I mean, this is just all over the place. The money just rolls in. But
they get it. They understand that if they can outspend the conservatives and outspend the Christians, they win. And unfortunately, we live in a world right now that if you outspend the other guy, you do win. I mean, look at the race right now between Kathy McMorris Raj and Lisa Brown in Washington State.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Rosie O'Damn Donald. That's right. Rosie O'Damn Donald just contributed to that race. She contributed the max she could as an individual because she wants to see her win Washington State.
Wow.
And folks out there in the listening audience, you guys have got to get off your hands.
She's a psychotic
leftist. I do this all the time because it's – I don't care if you donate to John Jacob. I don't care. But you guys have got to get off your hands. And I'm part of a project right now I'm working on with some other guys from the readout that we are working to regain a foothold in the youth to make it cool to be one of us again because the left has made it cool to be one of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we can get the youth of today as well involved and get them engaged because, frankly, Lisa Brown and those guys have their talents into our kids.
Yeah, they do.
You know? And we have to, as Christians, we have to come back and as parents and as leaders in our community to really reach out and grab those kids and not let them go and, you know, appeal to them at the sources they want to be appealed to at. But more or less, we got to make it cool and we got to make it, you know, they have to appeal that it's okay to be a conservative. It's okay to have an opinion of your own and, you know, it's okay to treat people with respect and to not – you know, live life by the YouTube and, you know, by the Instagram, which, hey, don't get me wrong. Instagram it's a great marketing tool, but we see it gets used in a lot of really bad ways too. And from
The social media area is one that
the left uses that
definitely have dominated. No doubt. Well, Fox 519, brother,
look at what Facebook did. I mean,
I know.
Go ahead.
Oh yeah, well that's another thing I want to dive into too is not tonight where we're running out of time, but it's this this shadow banning and this whole creation of I was talking to Mark Herr from Center for Self-Governance about this the other night, and that is that essentially they're creating a whole new government where you have executive, judicial, and even legislative components to this hidden dark. I mean, it's even deeper than deep state, it's like another tentacle of deep state, but the social media, that's being used, the way that they're stifling the message of those on the right and elevating the message of those on the left is having it. It is operating almost as if it were like a rogue government. Over the embedded and cross, and it crosses, it has no jurisdiction, no restrictions. It crosses all boundaries. It's really an amazing thing that as we discuss this. So yeah, that's one that's a very difficult thing to play in because the left has control over it. It's satanic. The level of power that they have over the minds of people. Incredible stuff.
Oh, it's very much controlling. And right now, because of I call it the bridge building mode that I'm in, is, you know, we have got to get conservatives all on the same page. And yes, we may not always agree on how to accomplish things or even some of the principles we agree on. But here's the way I look at it is right now, the conservative party in, I would say, This will be a bold statement. In Eastern Washington as well as Eastern Oregon, they've got to really stop the infighting because, one, it's costing us money because everybody's busy suing everybody. And, two, the left is coming out of nowhere And they see it, and they're stoking the fires of divisiveness in it. Yeah. And if we're going to hope to maintain a fight this fall against Lisa Brown and people like her, then they've got to kind of put a few things aside and say, okay, we'll work through this when the time comes. But right now we've got to maintain the line.
Yep.
Because right now there's so much fighting that the left is just using it like crazy, and they love it. Yep. Man, do they love it. I maintain, because of what I do in the collegiate circles, I have a lot of left-leaning guys that I work with, and they love it. I mean, Lisa Brown was in Spokane, Washington a couple weeks ago, and two or three of the guys I know attended, and they're saying they are eating it up, the fighting, the infighting, the, you know, who's sleeping with who and who said this about who in the media. And I think it's time that we really evaluate the use of social media and how we communicate, because so much can be taken out of context and we just stir the pot. And does that do any good? Does that build relationships? Does that solve or mend any hurts that have taken place? It certainly doesn't make any money or provide any economic stability, because it actually provides less stability, because if you get butt hurt over something, somebody's going to sue somebody else, and then money's flying out the door where it could be going towards a candidate or finding legislation or, you know, supporting good people like Franklin Graham or, you know, other Bible colleges. We've got to mend those bridges and mend them rapidly, as the way I see it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, come November, we're all going to be fighting a fight that's very, very different than what we see right now.
Well, we've been saying this for a long time, and that's that the division, the egos and the division among the patriot community is just that's going to be our undoing, you know. And it is so difficult to overcome that and convince people to set some of those things aside. On top of that, we have legitimate division where you have leftists infiltrating, wolves in sheep's clothing. Leftists calling themselves Republicans saying support me, and when you say no, they say, oh, you're causing division, you know. And and so there's the legitimate division as well. I mean, we're refusing to align ourselves with people we should not be aligning ourselves with, and then you got division among people who for all other practical purposes are completely in line with one another, but they have the ego and falling out personality issues. And that's what's really being exploited also. So it's a tough road. I mean, it almost will lead you to a state of, I guess, despair, where you don't really see any hope. But, of course, you know, also we know as Christians, you know, there's, only until Christ is reigning, then, you know, will we have that perfect world that we're trying to achieve. But, it's a challenge. Each of us has to stay true to, you know, our principles and not waver, and try to find unity among the other patriots and not let the egos rise to the surface. I don't know how much more we can stress that.
You know, it's interesting. I heard a commencement speech not too long ago, and I'll kind of maybe leave you with this thought, is that Viktor Frankl, esteemed theologian, survivor of many horrible things in his life, said, "He who has the why to live for can almost withstand the how." And that thought has kind of, especially in this transition of who I am and where I'm going, what I'm focused on, is that really kind of summed it all up for me. And when you think about what we live for, we live for the King. We live for the ultimate, being able to walk through those gates and being said, "Enter in, thy good and faithful servant." But I also think of when we're down here and our everyday missions and what we do, is that, you know, our why has to be very, very focused every day.
Yes.
You know, I'm one of those guys now that I get up and I run it, you know, 0445, and then I, you know, got lots of things I focus on throughout the day, and then get back to the gym later in the day. And that's my routine. That's my why now. My why is to be the strongest mentally, the strongest spiritually, and the strongest physically. And
amen.
That has driven more for me in the past bit. Now, the why may be different for everybody in your listening audience, but I think when they really understand and they live for that why, I live for Jesus Christ, I live for my family, I live for my community. And when we keep those things out in front of us, it's amazing how we can overcome a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And that ego thing has got to be – that's not a why. That's a how. That's a stumbling block in our way. We can look at and go, okay, that person's got an ego, but where do we meet in the middle? Right. Where do we have a conversation that is going to be uplifting, kind, able to have a rhetoric that, yes, we believe in different things. I'll use an example in my own life that, you know, during this transition time, I took the opportunity to meet with some of the opposition leaders, some people on the left, and I've really made it my focus to have conversations like this once a week where if I don't understand where they're at, how am I ever going to combat them?
Right.
So I purposely put myself in places where I can meet people on the left, but more or less hear their story, because it does two things. One, it gives us some intelligence on where their thinking is at. Why do they think that way? But at the same time, it can also open the door to how can I love that person? How can I live a witness right here for Jesus Christ in this moment that they may never see anybody ever again that is going to be a living witness to them. And it's amazing the conversations that have taken place. I've befriended atheists. I've befriended gay and lesbian people, not saying they know right up front, I do not agree with what they believe in, but I still love them because God created them and I don't accept their sin. And it's opened up a lot of dialogues here in the readout and built some bridges where I think we're going to pull some really important things out that are going to really help us in the future to solve some problems as far as, you know, getting back to a conservative mindset. But it takes time.
Yeah.
Oh, and so, yeah. You know, having those conversations are difficult. It's weird and awkward, but it has given us a level of understanding we never have before, because the left has implanted people within us, like you said, and they understand us and they understand the way we think. And we have to be different with how we approach things these days. We have to be very, very cautious, but at the same time have different strategies, because the same things aren't always working anymore.
Right. Yeah. Good stuff. Oh, man. God bless you for the work that you're doing, and keep it up. And as you have updates for this, you know, what you're doing with I know we just talked briefly about it, the reaching the youth. That's so critical. So definitely keep us posted on that as well. And
we will. Yeah. And when we launch, we'll talk with you about a little bit what it means and why we're doing it.
Absolutely. And how we can support it for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. God bless you, brother. You just keep up the great work, and we'll make sure that we don't go so long without staying in touch here in the future.
Yeah.
I know we're busy.
You,
it's like two ships passing in the night, all the stuff that we've got going on and things that we're juggling. But you just keep up the great work, and Godspeed to you. All right. You have a blessed week. Thank you.
You
Fox
too, man. 519. Talk to you later.
Thank you. All right. You all have a blessed week this week. Thank you guys for your prayers and for your support. Thank you for your letters of encouragement and your financial support, which we are in great need of. So thank you for prayerfully considering supporting us, and just be blessed, be safe, keep your powder dry, and tune in next week. This is the Voice of the American Redoubt, and my name is your name too. Good night.